thank you for listening to Take Note. This is episode 9. This is, of course, our podcast about notebooks, about paying attention, about parenting. But above all, it's an appreciation of the possibilities of any given moment viewed through the lens of keeping a notebook. I like to keep a notebook, and my name is Ted. Got my friend Adam here. He likes to keep a notebook.
I do like to keep a notebook, Ted.
So that's what we're going to talk about. So first, we're going to ask each other, what do you got? And that, of course, is our segment in which we read each other some of our favorite notes from the last, let's say a week. Adam, what do you got?
Ted, I was in the grocery store the other day, and I wrote down this quote the cashier said. I wrote down, "And you were looking for whole milk?" And a little bit of context here. The man was buying whole milk, and the cashier was checking to make sure he meant to buy whole milk. And I wonder, what is the policy? What's the process? Are we checking on everybody's milk purchase? Is it a concern about whole milk? Also, if she convinces everybody not to buy the milk that they're already buying, isn't that going to slow down the whole operation of the place?
And does it stop at milk?
Right.
Does it go to, and you wanted cage-free eggs? Those are the chickens that aren't in the cages. You did want the open sky. You're sure? Whole milk and cage-free.
It's got to
be... Okay, as long as you're sure. As long as you're sure.
I don't know if there was judgment in it. It's got to be the best thing I've ever heard, Ted. I swear. It's just so simple. It created so many questions in my mind.
Can you read it one more time for me, if you would?
And you were looking for whole milk?
Okay.
What do you got,
Ted? I've got one. So the rodeo season in Houston just concluded. This is, of course, the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo. One of the largest livestock shows and rodeos, I believe, in the world. I'm ready to say the world. They take over the football stadium and the associated arenas and whatnot. But at the beginning of the rodeo, which was some weeks ago now, they hold a large parade. It's very fun to take the children out. There's lots of horses and public officials riding horses and waving to people, and some floats with some scholarship winners. But what really stuck out to me at the rodeo this year, that I took a note in my field notes here. This is my since completed and nearly totally destroyed craft notebook I've been working on for a while. Here's my note. The main job at the rodeo parade appears to be catching cowboy hats that blow off of heads and roll down the parade route. And, there's just something wonderful about a bunch of cowboys chasing after the cowboy hat that has blown off the head of somebody nearby.
Bunch of cowboys kicking the hat as they run up to it, and then they can't reach it because they kick it out.
Oh, just a comedy of errors. But it's all very charming. The hats, listen, all the hats end up back in the right places where they started. But you see the gust of wind kick up. Everybody grabbing at their hat. Some people get there in time. Some people don't. Sometimes it's a person who's on a horse. Sometimes it's a person who's in a horse-drawn carriage. You can imagine the variations of hats blowing off of heads.
I think it's very generous of you, and it says a lot about you, that you're willing to refer to rodeo clowns as cowboys, because that's all they want.
What else you got?
All right. This weekend we went to... some sort of pancake breakfast at a nature center. You had to take a hayride to deeper into the woods. There was a tent. There's this whole thing. It started a little shaky because we were first in line for the hayride, and I don't know. Other people weren't interested in waiting their turn, but it all worked out, and nobody had. I didn't have to make a scene. But it was going to be really close, anyways. So. We see the line for the pancakes. And the wait, no exaggeration, from when we got to this nature center to when we actually got our pancakes was 90 minutes. kids were doing great. We finally get to the pancake serving area, and the server asks, "Well, so you could buy a whole. You could buy a whole or a half. The whole was 4 pancakes, and the half was 2." The server looks at me, and I had a whole order, and she asks if I want 3 instead of the 4 I paid for because they were so large. What she said was, "Do you want 3 instead of 4 because they're so large? You know, we've been waiting 90 minutes here." and all I could think to say was, and so that's what I wrote down, but all I could think to say was, "I'll take however many I paid for, thank you." Which was pretty good for a hungry person.
But there's something really flawed there about the way that she basically put the onus.
Oh, yeah. I was definitely honest, for sure.
She put it literally and figuratively on your plate to decide what an appropriate portion of pancakes was.
Only way she could have got me more is if she'd said, "Do you want 3 or 4, big guy?"
Had you at this point seen the pancakes? Were you even in a position to make a judgment?
As she was handing them to me. But, you know, we got 4 people. We ordered, you know, 1 whole, 3 halves. What if one of the kids is hungrier? It turned out to be more than enough pancakes. Couldn't finish them all. But, I mean, we'd paid for them, and then we waited 90 minutes for them.
And then she...
Yeah. She owned us to me.
It's not so much the big guy part. It's the part that says, "Hey, we have no idea what we're doing here."
Right. Yeah, I'm
going to onus you with because we don't know how to make an appropriate portion of pancakes.
Right. I don't think it was really a big guy situation. it was definitely, "Oh my God, there are so many people in line for pancakes and I don't know how many more there are" situation.
There you go.
Yeah.
You're getting to it. All right, let's see. What else do I... I got one here. And I'm actually, for this one, I'm flipping over to my new in the rotation Claire Fontaine pocket notebook, which I think I might touch back on a little bit later. Let's see. I'm going to flip to this note. So I was reading, I finally finished, In a Sunburned Country by Bill Bryson, the well-known travel writer, science writer, actually. He's really good at writing about science, and he's very funny. But near the end of this book, which is about Australia, he takes a series of trips to Australia and kind of has this burgeoning awareness of Australia as a place, but also the conclusion of the book is, "Hey, all this really interesting stuff is happening in Australia and none of us will ever know about it." That was basically the end of the book. But he visits a place called Shark Bay, which is a cove that replicates the conditions from 3 billion years ago in this brackish sort of cove of ocean water, but it's salty enough that it's inhospitable to life, and it's cut off by kind of this formation, such to the point that there's actually these small organisms that existed 3 billion years ago that still exist now called stromatolites. Anyway, this is what I wrote down, and I quote from the book. They're these little blob-like, just little blobs. They're almost not even... There's nothing even really to see. It's just these murky blobs in salty water. And he says, quote, "Each of them capturing a molecule of carbon dioxide and a tiny beat of energy from the sun and combining them to fuel its unimaginably modest ambitions to exist, to live." And then you add 3 billion years to that, and then you're doing a podcast about notebooks. All right, so that was kind of a dramatic reading there.
Yeah, that was dramatic and beautiful and poetic. So I've got one more really stupid one. Today, I wrote this today. find a wallet, Google name and town, find an article about murder for hire plot. And just on top of that, I thought you'd really like to know, this is the second wallet I found this year.
So what happened when, did you take your own advice yet? Is that a to-do list?
Oh, yeah, that's right. It's a to-do list.
Did you Google it?
Oh yeah, I did. Telling... This is what I did. I Googled it, and what I Googled the name, and I Googled the town where we were to try to figure out who it belonged to or how to get it to the person. And the article that came up was about a murder for hire plot. Unrelated, it turns out. Similar name, not the same.
Yeah. Obviously unrelated.
I went and returned the wallet at my lunch hour. I derailed a perfectly good lunch hour on a magical quest to return a wallet.
But did you find him?
Yeah. Well, I found his parents.
And you murdered him.
Yeah, right.
For money.
Right. But
well, that's what the article was about.
Yeah.
All right. What else we got? Should I do one more? What do you got?
Whatever you want.
It's very stupid. Okay. Here's my note. I nearly used the paperclip that was holding my shirt together to get the broken pencil lead out of my pencil sharpener.
Rough days for you, huh, buddy?
Which is to say, I had a broken button on my shirt. I was at work, mind you. My solution to, you know, basically the gaping sort of, you know, patch of undershirt that would flare through, that everybody loves to see in a coworker when they're in the workplace. I solved that little issue by taking a paper clip, poking it up through the half button that was still there, putting it through the button hole, twisting up the paper clip like some sort of an old-timey sailor, you know, fixing a sail in a mighty storm, and squeezing it all together, so it created the illusion that I had all my buttons in place. So then I was sharpening my Blackwing, my Palomino Blackwing. MX is what the erasable fellows call it, just the classic black one. I think that's the right one. And I broke off the lead in my little Coombe sharpener there.
Yep.
Like, dang, I don't really have anything good to kind of... It had to be narrow to poke in there. I thought, I got a paperclip. Better leave that one.
I know. Better leave that one. Undress. I had an oddly similar situation once. There was a loose thread in my sleeve, and I was like, I'll just pull this out. And I pulled the thread, and the entire sleeve opened up. The entire, like, from, you know, from my elbow down past my armpit. And I was not wearing an undershirt. And I was at work, and I had to seal it up with those binder clips. I used mini binder clips to seal up my shirt.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
I didn't think of binder clips. That's actually what they use on photo shoots if someone's clothes... If they want them to fit a little better, they'll you know, clip them. They'll put them in the back. They'll clip them on the back of the shirt, and it just kind of makes the shirt a little more snug.
I love that we are talking about stationery, but we are not talking about stationery.
Stationery adjacent?
Right.
Maybe.
Or we're talking about office products, but we're not really talking about the right way to use office products.
Paper clips for clothing, the whole pencil tip breaking off in the sharpener at the office, it's sort of like this is what I've bought into with this stationary lifestyle that I've chosen. I've chosen to put myself in a position in which I'm unclogging an unnecessary pencil sharpener. You know, with a lead from a fancy wood-cased pencil in an open office space in which anybody glancing over it would appear as though I were trying to, you know, construct some sort of, you know, device of my own making, like I was trying to survive on a on a desert island and, you know, making a mouse trap or something like that. But in reality, I'm in a modern workplace with a computer sitting there right in front of me, basically creating wood shavings and graphite powder. just making a complete mess. Just a total mess.
You know, the day you decide to bring a special pencil sharpener at work is really, that's the day you've crossed a line. And I mean, I've crossed that line, but it's,
yeah,
you're really committing to it.
I've got the one kind of wise guy coworker, which I'm a fellow wise guy, so he kind of dishes it out. But I believe one of the messages on the chat room that we have was once, Ted, what's the story with all the pencils? People are talking about it.
Oh.
It was in good fun.
Yeah.
But I think they were talking about it. The other thing, I was carrying my pencil sharpener on the stairwell at one point. Very sterile, sort of. It was like the back stairwell in a big office building, so it's kind of concrete and whatever.
Yeah.
No, but very rarely used except to go, you know, to one specific place. But I dropped my pencil sharpener at one point, and a bunch of the shavings fell out. And I was going to another meeting or something, so I was just like, oh, whatever, I'll just leave them there. And
but you didn't realize that they were gonna know.
Okay. A day later, someone posted a message. Saw some pencil shavings on the must be dead. Son of a. I still didn't go clean them up for whatever reason. And I want to say 3 weeks later, I went back down that stairwell. The pencil shavings were sitting there in the exact same position in which I had dropped them on the floor and left them 3 weeks before. There was just not enough. It was like Bill Bryson's stromatolites of pencil shavings. They were undisturbed for billions of years for future scientists to...
Little note next to him says, "Dear janitor, let Ted clean up his own mess."
It's the life we chose. This is the life we chose. We wouldn't have it any other way.
That's right. Haters gonna hate. So, Ted, how have you been using your notebook this week?
This week, so as I mentioned, I finished on my last field notes, and I switched this week to a Claire Fontaine pocket notebook that I picked up on a whim at my local stationers, Dromgools, which actually it's Dromgools got a shout out on the most recent episode of The Pen Addict, which is interesting. My takeaway is that they have made a big push recently to kind of get on the scene and send some people out to the pen shows that these folks talk about. They've kind of upped their social media presence. They've enhanced some of their spaces in this store. I mean, this is a store that's been around for 40 plus years, I think, in a pretty iconic little shopping area here in Houston, Texas. So it's been fun to see them kind of enter into this new web-friendly stationary environment that I think you and me have both taken advantage of and found really enjoyable. So anyway, it's cool to see an old school place like that kind of jump up. Anyway, that's where I got this book, and they were the fountain pen place, you know, 30 years ago when it was even more of a niche market. And I love shopping there. It's really fun. And they carry field notes, they carry tons of Rhodia stuff. They've started carrying Baron Fig, I believe, although I haven't actually seen those in the store yet. Anywho, I picked up this Claire Fontaine pocket notebook. My idea being, you know, piece of paper stapled together. Let me see what this has to offer. So I've started using it. It's actually, you know, so on the back, it's 90 gram paper, which I take to be pretty fancy, pretty smooth, pretty thick. Kind of more robust than your typical field notes paper, and smoother than even like the dime novel paper. It's made in France, which actually that's pretty cool. It's got a nice cover, but it's what I notice is it's a lot thicker. So, you know, a Field Notes, you've got your, it's kind of a straight up fold with a staple. This one is almost kind of this, it's got a square binding on the back. Like it's enough paper that when you fold it, it creates a full kind of rectangular edge, but it's still stapled and it has these funny little off-centered staples on the back. So it's trying to do a little bit more than a Field Notes. But it, I mean, it's a really nice notebook, and it's what I think is that the additional thickness is going to make it probably break down a little bit quicker. It takes up a little more space in my back pocket, which is where I like to carry. I put it next to my wallet in my back pocket, so the thickness is kind of a thing I have to pay a little bit of attention to. So I'm going to see if this thing, it's already starting to come apart at the binding a little bit, and I'm really not that far into it. I mean, but so far, you know, it's nicer paper than a Field Notes. It's paper folded in half, and it's got a staple through it.
I don't put my notebooks in my back pocket unless I'm almost done with them and they've shown no wear, and then I'm trying to affect a little worn out look.
Like at the Levi's factory when right. They throw them in the rocks in the washing machine before they put it on the shelves.
I start distressing my notebooks.
This craft, I'm holding it in my hand right now, and the cover is completely separate. I mean, it just fell apart. And this is the same one I talked about a couple episodes ago that got wet. So it's drenched. It's the cover came off. It's the whole kit and caboodle. I tried to tape it up a couple times. It's a fiasco. So this new one, yeah, we'll see how it goes. It's beautiful. I put some. What I've been doing lately is making my own stickers. I think I've mentioned this before. So for this one, I'll take a picture of it and maybe put it with the episode here. But it works nicely. The little Team Sisu homemade sticker that I made.
Oh, nice!
It's got little blue kind of blue tones. Anyway, that's what I've been using. So it's kind of a little bit of an experiment.
Nice.
What have you been using?
Well, I'm still working on the same Field Notes I've been using for a couple weeks now, the Field Museum Field Notes. And I have been filling it lately with packing and to-do checklists because we're going to try to go on a vacation.
You fool!
Yeah. That's exactly how it feels. And I guess there were two things on the subject of stickers. At the beer store today, there were a bunch of stickers on the counter, like stickers affixed to the counter. And so I asked the cashier whether they had any stickers, and he said no. And then he said yes, and he handed me a really lame sticker. Like he knew it wasn't a good idea. He knew it was a sticker I wasn't going to want. So he just said no to me. You know, it was just a big, useless sticker. And then there's something that feels so stupid about thinking, like, oh, what a shitty free sticker. You know, like, what is that?
So he basically said, more or less, you sure you want that sticker, big guy?
That's right. Yeah, that's right. You want, it's a pretty big sticker. You want three or you want four?
I don't know. We offer pretty crappy free stickers. Are you sure you want that sticker?
And then the other thing that I was going to talk about with just the things that we're using and how we're using them on that subject is there's a good article on the Pen Addict called 5 Days, One Pen that I enjoyed about, it's written by Sarah Reed, and it's about what you actually take on vacation because you don't want to take all your nice things necessarily, and you're really not going on vacation to, you know, writing a notebook about a fancy pen or whatever, but... So there's a great photo in there with a cheap Bic pen. I like a cheap Bic pen, and I was like, oh, nice, this is going to be about cheap Bic pens. But next to it is another pen. I didn't even realize at first that it was a pen. It's a Schon Design pen, pocket pen, yeah. And I'm suddenly seeing those all over, not all over, but like I've seen them twice on social media and on Pen Addict, and I've been admiring that page. I am not an expensive pen guy, and these are not expensive pens, but they are what I would consider expensive pens. But I'm getting that itch a little bit for a nice pen.
Well, that pen design in particular, I recall that the Pen Addict, that Mike Hurley of the Pen Addict, I think he saw it at a show and made a big point on one of the episodes to bring attention to it because it was so distinctive looking. And as far as I recall, they love those pens, even independent of those fancy designs, which is, I'm just taking a look to see if they have a name for those. Multicolor aluminum. Yeah, no, so I think you're not alone. Get yourself a fancy pen. I think what I've learned, kind of just basic pen knowledge wise, is that there's many of these pens that fit into this category. They are a pen in the sense that they carry a refill, and that the refill is any number of established refills that you can use in any number of machined pens. It's just literally the pen body is different, and you just, someone machines something out of metal into which you can plug one of these mass-produced pen refills. It took me a while to really get a hold of that idea. But someone will machine a pen like that, and they'll say, here are the different kinds of refills you can use in this pen. Whether it's a Pilot G2 refill or a Schmidt refill, which those are really popular. So I think when I really came to grips with that, I decided that I don't know. It's an interesting thing. I want you to buy one and let me know what it feels like to go from 0 to, I'd say that's 45 miles per hour in the expensive pen world.
I've got one or two. I always lose the refills, or can't find the refills, or this or that. But I always think I'm going to lose the pen. I never actually lose the pen. Just never end up using it as much as I mean to.
I've lost the pen
You've lost the
before.
pen?
I got a really nice fountain pen, and I lost it. And I actually tweeted Brad Dowdy about it for one of their Ask TPA segments, and I said something like, but it was couched as a question, but it was the desire to have some public sympathy for my plight. It was like the first expensive fountain pen that I purchased, and I just straight up lost it. I took it somewhere I shouldn't have, to some remote event at work, and it just fell out of my pocket, and it disappeared. And I would like to say that that didn't faze me, but I definitely swore I'd never spend more than $40 for a pen. After that, I just thought, this feels so crappy that I'm going to eliminate this potential. Life is ridiculous enough. I don't need to put myself on the hook for this kind of disappointment, when if I lost a $40 pen, I wouldn't think twice about it, you know?
And that is why they will be talking about pens on the Pet Addict, and we will be talking about folded paper on Take Note.
With several staples. But I mean, it that does, I mean, it brings up a point about using notebooks that I think a lot of people talk about, but few people are willing to really say, which is that using fountain pens with these small notebooks kind of sucks. And I mean, a lot of people, I guess, like to do that, but like, to me, there's very little relationship between a fountain pen and a notebook that you cram into your back pocket to have with you when you have a thought, or when you see something silly, or when your kid says something. It's almost the antithesis of a fountain pen, which inherently takes time to open, takes time. You got to be careful, clearly, as I've proven. You got to be careful about where you put it. You got to be careful you don't lose it. all of these things are an anathema to parenting, to note-taking in real time, to capturing life as it happens, you know. It's all, and I realize that many people make it work. So if anything, I'm capturing maybe my own developing point of view, which I think is why I do enjoy talking about this with you, as opposed to getting into the minutiae of, you know, different layer models of pen and this and that.
Right.
Which you and I are clearly horribly unqualified
to. Right, because we're both just paralyzed by fear that we might lose something.
Oh, man. I mean, I lost one of those $2.50 calligraphy pens.
Yeah, that hurts.
Oh, it stung for weeks. I will say, my wife cleaned out the car, and she found it. It was wonderful.
Maybe that's where our pens are. Did she find any of mine?
I had already bought the replacement, though. So now I have to. Now, she didn't find any. Maybe it was yours. She probably found yours when you were in Houston.
Yours is still missing.
Quick shout out, by the way, speaking of your Houston trip. You, when you were here, you recommended to me Judge John Hodgman, the podcast, which I admitted I had listened to in the past, but I had fallen off from listening. And your recommendation got me back onto it, and I just want to give them a shout because it's like my favorite thing ever now.
Yeah, me too. I love that show, and then I think this specific episode that I recommended, which I just still have so much... It just makes me so happy, is the Timothy episode. It is the episode 336. I just looked it up, Turing Testimony, and there is a character named Timothy in there. Timothy with an N. And it, I think it's one of the best things I've ever heard.
And you, I think you can just go straight to that episode and you'll get full enjoyment. You don't even really need... You don't need to go back to episode 100 and listen all the way up to that episode to get deep pleasure.
Right. You don't really need to go to episode 1 to get deep pleasure out of our podcast either. In fact, I hope people don't.
If you just start at episode 4 and go from there, you'll have all the...
Agreed.
All the inside jokes and the back references that you'll possibly need. Speaking of which, let's do this again, huh?
Sounds good, Ted. I'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.